Welcome to Breakthrough Success. I'm your host, Mark Roberti, the content marketing expert, bringing you 5 new episodes every week where I and top-level guests teach you how to take your business to the next level and achieve your breakthrough. Hello, Breakthrough Success listeners. I just wanted you all to know before the episode actually starts, I've been working a little bit behind the scenes to give you something really special. So a while ago, I wrote my book, Content Marketing Secrets, which helps people create, promote, and optimize their content for growth and revenue. And I just put the finishing touches together to offer that for free to anyone who is interested. So if you want your free copy of Content Marketing Secrets, all you have to do is head over to markgoberti.com/book. Now, let's jump right into the episode. One of the most important things you need to do is constantly build relationships. Relationships allow you to come across new opportunities. They strengthen your mindset if they're the right relationships, and they just have such a big effect on people. So if you want to become successful, think about the relationships you are building and start building effective work relationships. That's going to be the focus of this episode. Today's guest has served on the board of directors for HR.com and is a member of the Association for Talent Development at the Society for Human Resource Management. In his latest book, Get Better, he shares 15 proven practices you can use to build effective relationships at work. Today's guest for episode 188 of the Breakthrough Success Podcast is none other than Todd Davis. Todd, it is such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Well, thank you, Mark. I appreciate being here.
Todd, I'm really looking forward to this show. I'm grateful you're able to stop by and share your insights with us today. I'm really looking forward to that, but I'd love to get some background first. So you wrote your book, Great Better. Again, those 15 proven practices you can use to build effective relationships at work. But why did you write the book? What's the inspiration behind it?
Yeah, well, thank you for asking. I have been involved in this line of work for the past 30 years, practically past 30 years. I've observed and coached leaders and others at all different levels, and from the literally hundreds of principles and tools and paradigms contained in Franklin Covey's world-class solutions. I work for the Franklin Covey organization. I've observed and seen time and time again those specific behaviors that are the real catalysts for creating, maintaining, building positive relationships. And so the impetus for me writing this book was the fact that I feel like I have something to share because of the line of work that I've been in. You know, we think of relationships, or some people think of relationships as kind of a nice to have. We've got a lot of work to get done, and if we can have great, effective relationships in the process, that's nice. Well, it's more than nice. It really has a significant impact on the bottom line when we can continually be building strong, effective relationships. And so that's the point of the book and what drove me to write it for the past 2 years, and why it's actually hit the Wall Street Journal bestseller list, I think, because it's such a relevant point for everyone.
And I agree that relationships are so important. I mean, the amount of knowledge I've been able to attain, the amount of opportunities I've been exposed to, is a lot in part to the relationships I built through a variety of means, through this show, through social media, and just through so many different things. It's just building relationships is really important. But for someone who understands that, for someone who's also just learning about it right now, that relationships is just not only this, it's not supposed to be viewed as some like, oh, a nice to have. It's truly an essential. But how do we start building a relationship at work? Like, how do we initiate it?
Yeah, well, we first of all have to take a dose of humility and realize that we're all in a state of getting better. That's the title of the book, Get Better. That whether I'm, you know, brand new in my career, or whether I've been, you know, president of several companies, that it's a continuous journey in getting better. The practices, as you mentioned, there are 15 of them. And practice one is the answer to your question. It's called Wear Glasses That Work. What practice one is all about and why it's practice one is that before we do anything, we need to step back and make sure we're seeing people and situations accurately. Are we wearing glasses that work? I remember my very first real set of corrective lenses, and those of you who are listening maybe had a similar experience. I was in the second grade, and I put on these new glasses, and for the first time, I could see the detail of the leaves up on the trees. And that sticks with me, and that was many years ago, because prior to that experience, when I looked up at the trees, I saw green, but I just saw kind of this green blur. And here's the point, Mark. I thought that's what you saw. I thought that's what everyone saw when they looked at the leaves up on the trees, until I had on glasses that worked. And so wearing glasses that work is really stepping back and making sure that we're not seeing things how we want to see them, or how we think they should be, or how we've convinced ourselves they are, but we're really seeing things how they are, including those we work with and the circumstances in which we work. That's the first thing we need to do to build effective relationships.
And part of how people view relationship building, and I'm going to shift more towards someone who is active with building relationships. They know that relationships benefit, like it's a mutual benefit that you get from building the right relationships. But you have some people who are so focused on the building that they forget about the nurturing. So how do you suggest we continue to build relationships, because we don't want to stop doing that either, while continuing to nurture the existing relationships?
Well, each of the, I wish we had a couple hours here, each of the 14 practices that follow practice one are really all about different ways to nurture these relationships and continue to grow them and strengthen them. For example, practice number four is called play your roles well. And playing your roles well, this idea came from a time when I was at a theater. I had a free evening in New York, and I was waiting to see a play, and I was reading the critic's review of the play. This critic really liked the play, and he or she, I think it was a he, had given this particular actress a great review, 5 stars out of 5, saying that she was extraordinary in her role. And it got me thinking, how extraordinary am I in my most important roles? Not roles played on a stage, but my most important roles, both at work and in my personal life. And what would my critics, my reviewers, those who are influenced by me in those roles, what kind of a review would they give me? And so this particular practice is all about identifying the most important roles in your life, and what are you doing in each one of those roles to ensure that you are strengthening and improving upon that relationship, even if it's already in a good place? Are you making, what are the meaningful contributions you're trying to make in each one of those roles? So that's just one example of what we do to increase, to nurture, to build upon an effective relationship. Practice number 7 is titled Think We, Not Me. This is all about having the mindset of abundance, thinking about what's in it for us, what's in it for all of us on the team, including me, versus what's in it for me, which is a kind of a human nature thing we tend to go to first. So what does the abundant mindset tell you to do so that we can think of a win for all of us versus just thinking for ourselves? Or sometimes you get somebody who's a martyr and they just think, okay, well, it's all about them and I don't worry about me at all. Thinking we, not me, is thinking abundantly about all of us and what's a win for all of us. So those are a couple of examples in the book of how we nurture and build upon effective relationships.
I really like the examples of how I can just continue to nurture and build the relationships. And I really like the idea of that we, because if you involve people within the relationship, the relationship just deepens, like the moment you involve them in things and just continue to stay in touch and build the relationship. But relationships that we've already addressed, that it's not one of those like nice to have things. It's essential, but it's not the only thing essential in business. Like if you're an author, like relationships can help you sell more books, but you still have to write the book. You still have to do a few things on your end. And it's not just authors. It applies to anyone. Like there are things you have to do on your end. So how do you balance the time you spend building and nurturing relationships and doing the other things in your business, like creating a product or creating new content?
Yeah. Well, I think it is a balance, but it's actually things that are done simultaneously. So you bring up a very good point. There have been, especially recently, numerous articles and studies done on this, that what people are hired for and what they're fired for is way in proportion, the technical skills, you know, their ability to develop a product or even write a book or program, do some coding, you know, in IT. While they've got to have those, it's these I'll call them people skills. It's these relationship building skills, their amount of flexibility, their ability to read the room, to work well with others, to bring out the best in others. All of these, what have formerly been called soft skills, that's the 80 to 90% of what people are hired and fired for. Now, of course, they have to have the technical competencies. Of course, they have to have that. But those things are much easier to measure, to identify, to look at on a resume, to get, you know, examples of things like that. But how do you get an example of how flexible or adaptable someone's going to be 3 years from now when the company changes its strategy or reorganizes? And all of a sudden you learn for the first time that this person is so stuck in their ways, they can't see their way to a new situation, or they can't see people differently. These are the things that are so critical, especially in today's what many call a war on talent, where we're trying to find the very best people. Yes, they have to have the technical skills, but it's becoming even more and more important that along with those skills, they have these relationship skills that we've been talking about.
And I was recently reading a book that communication and all these people skills are growing in importance because technology is able to do so much, and no matter how much technology advances and replaces certain things, the ability to communicate and having those communication skills is something that will remain important, and it's only going to grow in importance over the years. And it's already something very important to focus on, communication, those people skills, as Todd referenced before. So if you feel like you are not a people person or anything like that, I would look into building some relationships and gradually becoming a people person, because that's going to be a really important skill.
You know, Mark, you're exactly right. If I can, just as you're talking, I'm so passionate about this book. Two other practices that just hit on exactly what you're talking about. Practice number 13 is called Make It Safe to Tell the Truth. And the point of this practice is, do you act in a way and behave in a way that makes it safe for others to tell you the truth? Because how in the world do we get better? How do we know if we don't have people skills, the necessary people skills and relationship skills, if we don't make it safe for people to give us feedback? I had a situation a while ago, a couple of years ago, that I write about in the book, where there was a person, tying back to this earlier topic, there was a person, she had 3 degrees. She had been with our company for a very long time, wildly talented, very experienced, and yet she was getting passed over for a lot of really great opportunities. And she was frustrated with this. And this was the inspiration for practice number 11, which is called Get Your Volume Right. What this practice is about is when you have any strength dialed up too high, turned up too high, it starts to work against you. So this person I'm talking about had multiple degrees, lots of education, lots of experience. She also had the strength of being very efficient. She was very organized. She is very organized and very efficient. And you think, gosh, what great strengths to have. But what happened unintentionally on her part, what happened is those strengths were dialed up so high that people didn't want to work with her because she was not flexible. She was so organized that everything was, you know, in her mind a certain way. And then when things like in your life and my life don't happen like they're supposed to, when things didn't happen how she had them organized, it was frustrating for her. And she couldn't work well within that. It had to be exactly how she had designed it. She was so efficient that her emails to other people and her conversation came across as curt or rude. That was not her intent at all. So when she one day made it safe for me to tell her the truth, practice 13, and said, Todd, I don't get it. This other opportunity, I just got passed over again, and someone else less experienced, less educated than I am, got put in that opportunity. will you help me see why? And it was a hard conversation. You know, it's hard to tell somebody people don't like working with you. Mm-hmm. But we have the courageous conversation, and she was so great with her intent, really wanting to get better. She started to ask for more and more feedback about her behaviors, of how this dialed up strength of efficiency and organization was actually working against her. So again, sorry to go on and on about this, but it's just reiterating your point of, you absolutely can learn these skills and develop these skills, but you got to be open to getting the feedback and then learning from other people, just like I learned from others as well. We're all improving how I can get better and better at it.
Yes, and I do like that theme of the constant improvement. Like, we're going to be like, if you take your personal development very seriously, I mean, one of the most recent episodes, I heard someone suggest create a personal development plan. Jim Johnson made that recommendation in the previous episode. But basically, like, we need to figure out, like, how do we start today, and by the end of that day, we are a better person. And I think we should all be thinking about that.
Great concept. Yes.
And I know that you take relationships very seriously. I mean, you've written a book about it. You've helped people to achieve their goals and find out, like, things that may be holding them back. And some people, they want to build relationships, but they may not be building relationships with people they want to, or they have ideas of, like, the people they want to build relationships with, but it's just not happening. And with that in mind, I'm wondering, what do you believe holds most people back from building the and nurturing, obviously, the healthy relationships that they want to build?
I think the primary thing, and I begin the book this way for this very reason, because of the question you asked, we as human beings have a tendency to think the problem's out there. You know, Mark needs to change, or Susan needs to change, or my mom needs to change. Instead of saying, wait a minute, what do I need to do differently? There was a famous play written in 1940 by the French philosopher Jean-Paul Sartre. And the play is called No Exit. It begins with three individuals in the afterlife, okay? And these three souls, I'll call them, they find themselves in a room with no door, and where the windows are completely bricked up, thus the title of Exit. And to make matters worse, they really irritate each other. And because they irritate each other, they try to change each other, and that doesn't go so well, and it only escalates their frustration. And they soon come to realize in this play that hell isn't fire and brimstone or this torture chamber they'd imagined, but hell is in fact other people, people who won't do or change or behave the way that we want them to. Now, it's just a play, but think about it. How often do we find ourselves with others who irritate or who annoy us? And so we're always trying to change or fix them in some fundamental way. And what happens when our attempts to fix them don't work? Now, one other point that Sartre makes in his play is that in this room, no door, windows bricked up, in this room, there are no mirrors. And so even if they wanted to, these people who are so busy trying to change each other, they don't have the opportunity to take a look in the mirror and say, what do I need to do differently? What do I need to model? Or where do I need to get better? And so that's the point. The most influential, whether you're in a leadership position or not, the most influential, successful, and therefore happiest people in the world, they actually start with themselves. Even though everybody around them may need to be changing, they focus on what they need to do and model differently. And that is the biggest influencer of everybody else around them, on their teams and their families and everywhere else.
And I really find that story interesting in the sense where I feel like there are people who they want to change someone else, but they may not necessarily be looking inward. And there's something said to it. It's something similar to this, but the best way to help others and show support for others is to help and show support for yourself, because you are the role model for some people, and the way you change yourself affects how other people change.
Well, I couldn't agree more, and I think Gandhi was onto something there when he said, I'm paraphrasing, but be the change you seek in the world, and that's exactly right, exactly what you're saying.
And change is just a natural part of the journey. I mean, we all change, but if we are conscious about it, we could change for the better. And I believe all of us, as one of the themes is just that idea where we improve every day. But part of the things that change us are the challenges that we have to face along our journey. And with that in mind, Todd, I'm wondering if you could share with us one big challenge you faced on your journey and a powerful lesson you learned during that challenge.
Yeah, just one. I've had many.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tie it back to one of the practices again, because it's the practice I struggle the most with. And again, I'm working on all the practices, but practice number six, and I think a lot of people will relate to this, practice number six is titled Avoid the Pinball Syndrome. You all know, or hopefully know, what a pinball game is.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure there are dozens of apps now for our smartphones, but back in the heyday when these big, you know, wild machines with bells and buzzers and whistles on them, these pinball games, and you'd pull the plunger back and send this ball up into the machine, and then you have these flippers on both sides of it. And the whole goal is to keep this ball bouncing and ricocheting off the bumpers and hitting bells and chalking up points as you go. And you keep it going for as long as you can, but eventually gravity wins out and the ball drops down through the hole in the bottom of the machine. And then you pull the plunger back and start over again. And it's fun and it's stimulating. It can be a little bit exhausting, and it's a game. And yet what happens to most of us in life, I don't know about you, but I'll get to the end of a day or the end of a week, and I've been really busy, and I've been going from meeting to one-on-ones to this and that. And yet I step back and I look over the week and I think, what of real value did I accomplish? What real meaningful thing? What big important goal did I make some headway on? And what happens is, or at least what happened to me, big wake-up call, was that I've confused, and we sometimes confuse, the urgent with the important. And because it's busy and because we're working and we're tired, we've fooled ourselves sometimes into thinking we're getting something really important done, when really we're just busy, like the pinball game. And so avoiding the pinball syndrome, and it's a constant effort. I realized I was getting caught up in this nearly 20 years ago. Excuse me. And so avoiding the pinball syndrome, when I'm most successful at it, is when I take the week before the week begins, and my work week begins on a Monday morning. So on Sunday night, I will spend, now I can do it pretty quickly. Originally, it would take me maybe 45 minutes. Now I can take maybe 20 minutes on a Sunday night, and I look at the coming week. I look at the appointments I have. I look at the things that are locked in that probably can't be moved. I look at what I call my mission statement. It's a document I prepared a long time ago, just reminding me of what I value most, what's important to me. And I review that. And then I look at the people in my life, both in my personal and my professional life, the most important roles in my life. And there are seven that I have categorized, seven important roles. You know, there's my role as coach, which I like to think of as my chief people officer role. There's my role of colleague, of friend, of parent. And I look at those roles and I block out time during the week. I do this on a Sunday night, during the week, that I'm going to make some kind of a contribution. It might just be a phone call. It might be a trip to a dinner with one of my kids or something like that. And I block out that week so that I've got those things filled in, so that then Monday morning, when the urgencies take over, which always happens, and unexpected things come up, I deal with those things as I can, but not at the expense of these very important things that I've blocked out during the week. It's not perfect, and my week doesn't end up being perfect, but boy, it ends up being so much better than if I had not gone through that exercise Sunday night. So that's how I work to at least reduce, if not completely avoid, the pinball syndrome during the week.
I really like the idea of how you're crafting out, you're planning out your week before it happens. And similarly to that, I plan out every day the night before, because not only do you wake up the next day with a better idea of what you're doing, but when you write down the things you're doing the night before, or the night before for a week in your case, you've got the subconscious working late at night as you're sleeping. And when you wake up, the subconscious is kicking in, you see what you have to do, you see what matters, you're focusing on the important instead of the urgent. And it's just so much better if you plan out the next week or even the next day, the night before.
It's a great point. Great point, Mark.
And I know you've made several great points in your book. I mean, you've sprinkled some of the great points in your book throughout your podcast. And in addition to your book, Get Better, I'm wondering if you could share with us three other books that you believe will have a positive impact on us.
Well, that is a good question. let me think about that. A couple of books that have really shifted my mindset and therefore my actions in my life. One is by Seth Godin, who I'm flattered to say and honored to say is a friend of mine as well, but it's called Linchpin. Are you a linchpin? You know what a linchpin is? It's that pin when you put a wheel over an axle and then you put the pin through so the wheel doesn't come off. That's called a linchpin. And it's a profound book. I would highly recommend it. And it's really how to make yourself indispensable to your company, to your team. How do you become truly a linchpin in your organization? So that's one that I would highly recommend. Another one that perhaps your listeners are familiar with, Malcolm Gladwell, The Tipping Point. And while it's a marketing book, it has so many great examples and a great lesson in what it takes, that what is the final tipping point that gets things moving in a completely different direction. And it's just a book I reflect back on all the time when I'm working on a big project or a big initiative or trying to change some aspect of our culture and realizing that it's consistency over time until you get to a point where there will be a tipping point that all of a sudden starts to shift everything. And often, more often than not, we give up too soon. And we're just a few yards away from the tipping point is the point that Malcolm Gladwell makes in that book. So those are two favorite books of mine that come to mind when you ask that question.
And can you share one more book as well?
Well, I can share like 20 more books. let me think.
I know it's hard. So at this point, it's like spin the wheel, see where it lands.
Yeah. I'm just looking at my bookshelf. I mean, there are so many, and I'm remembering, maybe that would be it. IDEO is a development company down in Palo Alto, California. And you'd be amazed all the things you and I use both in the office and at home that they create, that IDEO created. And there was a book that they wrote called Art of Innovation. And I was fortunate enough many years ago here at Franklin Covey, I've been with the company for 22 years, but about 18 years ago, we were able to go spend a couple of days down at IDEO in Palo Alto in there and walk through their innovation process and their system. And without going into a big long story, the brilliance of this company is starting with a clean slate, forgetting what we know. And it's really hard because we all have biases. We all have biases based on our experiences in life. Obviously, the younger you are, the fewer biases you have, but then you don't have the experience to try and do something. And so they have some great processes that they've written about in The Art of Innovation for wiping your mind, your slate clean so that you can see things in a whole different area. In fact, there's a famous video they did on Nightline, perhaps some of your listeners saw it, about the shopping cart. And they reinvented the shopping cart that we're all familiar with in the grocery stores. And it was genius. It was brilliant where it had a scanner right on the cart. And instead of a big basket, it had places where you hook baskets in because they found people didn't want to walk up and down the aisles pushing a big cart. So they'd leave their carts at the end of the aisle. They'd go up with these little baskets and fill up their stuff and then put it, and they would attach to this big basket. And I can't do it justice without you seeing the video. But it's not just for people who create, develop products for a living. It's for any project, any problem you're trying to solve. The art of being able to wipe away your preconceived notions or the current paradigms you hold get you that much quicker to really the art of solving a problem or solving a situation. So that's another book that I realize has had a profound impact on the way I do things every day.
Todd, thanks for sharing those great book recommendations. Those will be in the show notes for everyone interested, markverde.com/E188. And for anyone who wants to learn how to create, promote, and optimize their content for growth and revenue, you can also get my book, Content Marketing Secrets, over at markverde.com/book. And before we wrap up this episode, Todd, I've asked you several questions throughout our time together, but what do you believe is one question that we need to be asking ourselves more often?
I think for me, but I don't think it's just because of the line of work I'm in, I think the question we should all be asking ourselves is, at the end of the day, meaning the day or the month or your life, what difference did you make? It's a question I ask myself all the time. Todd, when all said and done, what difference did you make? And again, not to be too high-minded, but it is high-minded. I want to add value every day in my personal life and my professional life. So it's a good question for me to kind of keep the main thing, when I say, Todd, what difference did you make? What difference did you make today? And hopefully at the end of each day, and like I said, at the end of my life, I'll be able to feel like I really gave it my best and made a significant difference.
Todd, thanks for sharing that great question and all of your insights throughout our time together. And Breakthrough Success listeners, if you guys want to learn more about Todd, get his book, Get Better, where you'll learn about 15 proven practices you can use to build effective relationships at work. It is on Amazon. It is at Barnes & Noble. It is also in the show notes, again, markverde.com/E188. Todd, I can't thank you enough for sharing all of your great insights with us. It was such a pleasure to have you on Breakthrough Success.
Thank you, Mark. The pleasure was mine.
How does over 100 retweets per day sound to you? My free ebook, 27 Ways to Get More Retweets on Twitter, has you covered. I use the methods within this ebook to get over 10,000 retweets every single quarter. To learn